Go, Pastor Steve, we're live.
All right, good morning. You're listening to EFRradio.com. And the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts, and they do not necessarily represent the staff or advertisers or affiliates of EFR. So there's a disclaimer, and good morning to all.
We have advertisers?
Yeah,
we promote people. We promote health products, that sort of thing.
Right.
Okay, yep. All right, so
play the welcome. Music.
Here we go. And boy, have we got a lot of tyranny these days,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah, they're wondering where you are because you're not in the chat room.
Oh,
oh boy.
I have
you better
it
get in the chat. We are live.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
Eli just didn't, you know, we're discussing stuff before the show and trying to get coffee made.
Right.
And Eli's coffee maker died.
Yeah, right, yeah.
He's going to have to drink water.
Yeah, I'm going to have to drink water during the show. How can I wake up? Right. See, I'll be in there momentarily, but we're going to start a new series because last week, which was part 19 of the history of Herod finally died. He finally died. And so now his heirs are going to have a brief period of dynastic leadership. Okay. Of course, this dynastic leadership was imposed upon the people of Judea by the Romans, you know, until the Romans finally get sick and tired of dealing with Jews, right? So, okay, so we're going to go to Antiquities of Judah, Book 17, Chapter 9, Section 2. And to set up Section 2, we just had Archelaus take over from Herod. Basically, he was the last man standing after Herod killed everybody else, all his potential heirs and other pretenders to the throne. Archelaus was the only one left. He started out his reign briefly trying to appease the people and tell them, I'm going to be a good guy, not like my daddy, Herod. So,
right.
Okay, that was what he promised. And so we pick it up in section two or chapter two. Why don't you pick it up from there, Pastor Steve?
All righty. Let me get my yeller highlighter so I know where I am. I highlight the section numbers. He's a typical politician like we have today, saying one thing and doing another. This is section two. So when the king had suggested these things and instructed his general in what he was to say, he sent him away to the people. But they made a clamor and would not give him leave to speak, and put him in danger of his life, and as many more as were desirous to venture upon saying openly anything which might reduce them to a sober mind and prevent their going on in their present courses, because they had more concern to have all their own wills performed than to yield obedience to their governors, thinking it to be a thing insufferable, that while Herod was alive, they should lose those that were most dear to them, and then when he was dead, they could not get the actors to be punished. Sort of like now.
Yeah. Sort of like Trump promising to punish Hillary and not doing it.
Yeah, Hillary's going down. Gitmo, Gitmo, Gitmo. Mm-hmm. Get more BS.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what you're going to get mo of. Mo lies.
Right?
Oh, my. So they went on with their designs after a violent manner. I think that might reoccur.
Vigilantism.
It's getting ready to pop all over the place. We're just watching it build up. You know, a steam kettle has a release valve on it, you know, and you go, boop, when it tells you the water's boiling, when you're going to pour it in your coffee cup or for tea or whatever. The release valve is stuck. And I think we're building up steam pressure. And if you ever have seen a steam explosion, it is deadly, not only for the flying debris, but the scalding effect of that steam. Steam is lethal. It'll cook you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's bad. And thought all to be lawful and right, which tended to please them, and being unskilled in foreseeing what dangers they incurred.
Right, naive. And, naive people.
Okay. And when they had suspicion of such a thing, yet did the present pleasure they took in the punishment of those they deemed their enemies overweigh all such considerations. Well, that's similar to what might occur today.
Right.
People that are tarred with the same brush that have been associated with these evil politicians, they may get caught in the crossfire.
That's right.
You know, so history is going to repeat itself. Okay? Mm-hmm. This is going to be a long, hot summer. It's already up in the 90s here in Kentucky.
Okay.
So, and although Archelaus sent many to speak to them, yet they treated them not as messengers sent by him, but as persons that came of their own accord to mitigate their anger and would not let one of them speak. Shut up!
Right. We want what we want. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We want the world and we want it. Now,
right?
Remember Jim Morrison, the Doors?
Right.
The rebellion also was made by such as were in a great passion. Mm-hmm. In other words, they were hot to trot and ready to bop you on the head. And it was evident that they were proceeding further in rebellious practices by the multitude running so fast upon them. In other words, mob violence.
Right. Well, the people had 37 years of Herod occupation, which the true Judahites, still alive, detested. They all detested Herod.
They had had it up to their eyeballs, and you notice we have a resignation over in Europe. I'm going to quit. I'm resigning on the 7th.
That's a good thing.
The British people have had it up to their eyeballs. Now they got to get rid of the parliamentary members. I was listening to the show here this morning. They need to clean house.
That's right.
And they need to start deporting some of the ragheads over there.
Right, you know, right, and the Jews.
Not British. I don't care if you were born here. You're not British. You're going back to your home country. They need to go home.
Way too many Jewslums.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. All right, British, section 3.
Brit for the British. Ausländer raus.
Amen. Amen.
Just like Germany. Out.
Yeah. Well, we did that show last time showing the extent to which the British people are actually Germans, but refused to admit it.
Yeah. German, the Scots, and the Irish, and my family is in Scotland. I have a castle
right
in Scotland. And my family is
why aren't we living there?
In Wiesbaden, because it's oppressive government.
Right.
And my family's also in Wiesbaden and Stuttgart.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, I'm German, Scottish, Scottish, German. It's the same people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, amen. All right, yeah. Section 3. Now, upon the approach of that feast of unleavened bread, which the law of their fathers had appointed for the Judahites at this time, Which feast is called the Passover? And wait a minute, there's a note here. This Passover, when the sedition here mentioned was moved against Archelaus, was not 1 but 13 months after the eclipse of the moon already mentioned. Eclipse of the moon. Okay, I don't know where that was mentioned. I don't recall that.
Well, that anyway. Was a substitute Passover.
Oh.
They did a substitute, okay?
Okay.
Because so they were so much turmoil, they missed the first Passover. So they did a substitute.
Right, and that is scriptural. So these people, if you miss the real Passover, you can do a second one. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Very good. And is a memorial of their deliverance out of Egypt. And here Josephus is absolutely right. This is scriptural. So we see here that the true Judahites were still attempting to obey the law in spite of all obstacles.
Just like we're doing today. We keep Passover.
That's right.
And amen. We keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread after it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we keep the Feast of Tabernacles in the fall.
Right. Hoping
amen. For Yeshua's return to tabernacle with
us. Oh, man, we're dying for that. This is getting ridiculous. The level of violence and corruption is unbelievable. Continuing. And when an innumerable multitude came thither out of the country, nay, from beyond its limits also, in order to worship God, the seditious lamented Judas and Matthias, those teachers of the laws, and kept together in the temple and had plenty of food, because these seditious persons were not ashamed to beg it. And as Archelaus was afraid lest some terrible thing should spring up by means of these men's madness, he sent a regiment of armed men, and with them a captain of 1,000, to suppress the violent efforts of the seditious before the whole multitude should be infected with the like madness. Okay, so even though they were law-abiding Judahites, they were a mob, right? Apparently had no leader. They should have elected a leader to negotiate with Archelaus to see if he truly could change a few things, all right? But this doesn't look like it's going to happen. And gave them this charge, that if they found any much more openly seditious than others and more busy in tumultuous practices, they should bring them to him. But those that were seditious on account of those teachers of the law irritated the people by the noise and clamors they used to encourage the people in their designs. So they made an assault upon the soldiers and came up to them and stoned the greatest part of them, although some of them ran away wounded and their captain among them. And when they had thus done, they returned to the sacrifices which were already in their hands. Now Archelaus thought there was no way to preserve the entire government but by cutting off those who made his attempt upon it. So he sent out the whole army upon them and sent the horsemen to prevent those that had their tents without the temple and to kill such as ran away from the footmen when they fought.
No, you missed a line.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, there's a very small print here.
The temple from assisting those that were within the temple and to kill. Okay.
Aha. And to kill such as ran away from the footmen when they thought themselves out of danger. Which horsemen slew 3,000 men while the rest went to the neighboring mountains. So much for practicing Feast of Passover. Then did Archelaus order proclamation to be made to them all that they should retire to their own homes. So they went away and left the festival out of fear of somewhat worse which would follow, although they had been so bold by reason of their want of instruction. So Archelaus went down to the sea with his mother and took with him Nicolaus and Ptolemy and many others of his friends, and left Philip, his brother, as governor of all things belonging to both his own family and to the public. Now, who is this guy Philip? There went out also with Salome, Herod's sister, who took with her her children and many of her kindred with her. So they took a vacation in the midst of all this clamor.
Right.
Kind of like a Barack
Obama. Get out
Obama.
Of town for a couple of weeks. Let things calm down. Yeah, I can deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Golf. Which kindred of hers went, as they pretended, to assist Archelaus in gaining the kingdom, but in reality to oppose him. Okay, so we can see that Archelaus's reign is already tipsy-topsy, and chiefly to make a loud complaint about what he had done in the temple. Yeah, so he not only...
Well, they were plotting behind. They they just couldn't leave well enough alone.
Right. Well, they were
Edomites.
Waiting.
What do you expect? They throw each other under the bus all the time.
That's right. So he messed up really bad.
No problem.
And even though they weren't Passover keeping or unleavened bread keeping people themselves, they have a good excuse to criticize Archelaus now. But yeah. Sabinus, Caesar's steward for Syrian affairs, as he was making haste into Judea to preserve Herod's effects, met with Archelaus at Caesarea. But Varus, president of Syria, came at the same time and restrained him from meddling with them, for he was there as sent by Archelaus by means of Ptolemy. So we have two different officials of Rome at odds with each other, and Sabinus, out of regard to Varus, did neither seize upon any of the castles that were among the Judeans this time, because these people are not Judahites at all. These are pretenders, Judeans. Nor did he seal up the treasures in them, but permitted Archelaus to have them, until Caesar should declare his resolution about them. So that, upon this his promise, he tarried still at Caesarea, but after Archelaus was sailed for Rome and Varus was removed to Antioch, Sabinus went to Jerusalem and seized on the king's palace. Okay, so no sooner did Archelaus leave than somebody went to take...
They repoed my palace,
right,
man.
Right. He also sent for the keepers of the garrisons and for all those that had the charge of Herod's effects, and declared publicly that he should require them to give an account of what they had. And he disposed of the castles in the manner he pleased. It's dishing out political favors. But those who kept them did not neglect what Archelaus had given them in command, but continued to keep all things in the manner that they had been enjoined in them. And their pretense was that they kept them all for Caesar. Okay, so... many of these people were hoping that the Romans would finally leave, you know, because Herod... Yeah, but no luck there. Okay, back to you.
This is section 4. At the same time, also did Antipas, another of Herod's sons, sail to Rome in order to gain the government. See, he's plotting against the brother again. Being buoyed up by Salome, there's the babe in there again, with promises that he should take that government, than that he was a much more honest and fit man than Archelaus for that authority, since Herod had, in his former testament, deemed him the worthiest to be made king, which ought to be esteemed more valid than his latter testament. Antipas also brought with him his mother, more stirring,
right?
And Ptolemy, the brother of Nicolaus, one that had been Herod's most honored friend, and was now zealous for Antipas. They were taking sides. There were factions forming, okay? But it was Irenaeus, the orator, and one who, on account of his reputation for wisdom, was entrusted with the affairs of the kingdom, who most of all encouraged him to attempt to gain the kingdom, by whose means it was that when some advised him to yield to Archelaus as to his elder brother, and who had been declared king by their father's last will, he would not submit to do so. And when he was come to Rome, all his relations revolted in his favor. They were revolting people.
Mm-hmm.
And not out of their goodwill to him, but out of their hatred of Archelaus. Though indeed they were most of all desirous of gaining their liberty and to be put under a Roman governor instead of an Edomite.
Right.
Edomites were so horrible.
But if there were
too great an opposition made to that, they thought Antipas preferable to Archelaus, and so joined with him in order to procure the kingdom for him. Sabinus also, by letters, accused Archelaus to Caesar. Intrigue and more intrigue. Sounds like the deep state, doesn't it, today, folks?
Sure, we go from Barack Obama to Trump, and we have before then we had the Bushes and the Clintons. I mean, this is one corrupt leader after another. So, but here, this is very interesting that there must have been some Judahites among the Romans here. Obviously, these would be the people that Paul preached to when he went to Rome, the law-keeping Judahites who lived in Rome. And you know, who knows how many of
them. The Zarok branch of Yehuda.
Right, okay.
Was up in Rome. Absolutely.
And so they would have wanted to, even though they didn't live in Judea, they would have wanted to see the Edomites dethroned. They'd prefer a Roman leader to an Edomite leader. That's what we're being told here. All right.
Well, they might get a Judahite Roman.
Yeah, that's there. Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Paul was a citizen of Rome.
Make Judea great again. Thank you, Brother Adrian. All right. Section 5. Now, when Archelaus had sent his papers to Caesar, wherein he pleaded his right to the kingdom and his father's testament, with the accounts of Herod's money, money talks, and with Ptolemy, who brought Herod's seal, he so expected the event. But when Caesar had read these papers and Verus's and Sabinus's letters, with the accounts of the money, and what were the annual incomes of the kingdom, and understood that Antipas had also sent letters to lay claim to the kingdom, he summoned his friends together, to know their opinions. And with them, Caius, the son of Agrippa, and of Julia, his daughter, whom he had adopted, and took him, and made him sit first of all, and desired such as pleased to speak their minds about the affairs now before them. This could have taken a few months. Now, now Antipater, Salome's son, a very subtle orator, and a better enemy to Archelaus, spake first to this purpose, quote, that it was ridiculous in Archelaus to plead now to have the kingdom given him, since he had in reality taken already the power over it to himself, before Caesar had granted it to him. Now, this is not exactly true. Archelaus.
They lie about each other.
right. What Archelaus had really done is he had assumed authority over certain matters with the anticipation that Caesar might approve, or might not. He didn't seize things against the will of Caesar by any means. So this is a lie. It's a very subtle lie, Before Caesar had granted it to him and appealed to those bold actions of his in destroying so many at the Judahite festival. Now, that's true. Archelaus really messed up there. And if the men had acted unjustly, it was but fit the punishing of them that should have been reserved to those that were out of the country, but had the power to punish them and not been executed by a man, that if he pretended to be a king, he did an injury to Caesar by usurping that authority before it was determined for him by Caesar. So anyway, he shouldn't have used the military to crush a rebellion without Caesar's approval. But Herod had done the same thing.
Yeah, it's sort of like Waco, Texas.
There you go. But if he owned himself to be a private person, his case was much worse, since he who was putting in for that kingdom could by no means expect to have that power granted him, of which he had already deprived Caesar by taking it to himself. So now he's accusing Archelaus of being a usurper.
Yeah, he jumped the gun, yeah.
Right. He also touched sharply upon him and appealed to his changing the commanders in the army and his setting in the royal throne beforehand and his determination of lawsuits, all done as if he were no other than a king. So he should have been more patient and waited. He appealed also to his concessions to those that petitioned him on a public account, and indeed doing such things, than which he could devise no greater if he had been already settled in the kingdom by Caesar. He also ascribed to him the releasing of the prisoners that were in the Hippodrome and many other things that either had been done certainly by him or were believed to be done and easily might be believed to have been done because they were of such a nature as to be usually done by young men and by such as out of a desire of ruling seize upon the government too soon. He also charged him with his neglect of the funeral mourning of his father and with having merry meetings at the very night on which he died. He failed to put on a somber face. And that
ding
it was...
Ding dong, the king is dead.
Yeah, right.
Witcho king,
yeah.
The wicked king. Ding
right.
Dong, the wicked king is dead.
But now everybody in the kingdom was happy about Terence's death.
Yeah.
Archelaus was the only one who was being honest about being happy, right? But, yeah, you know, I can believe, you know, it was a 30-day promenade from Jerusalem to wherever he was buried. I can, if you were involved in that, you'd be very somber, too, and you wouldn't have
yeah,
to put
I
on
imagine
a,
the smell.
Right, right, yeah.
Why, he was ripe by the time mm-hmm. they got him buried.
Yeah, and everybody who participated was angry about having to do so. So they had somber faces, okay? Yeah. Archelaus didn't. All right. And that it was thence the multitude took the handle of raising a tumult. And if Archelaus could thus requite his dead father, who had bestowed such benefits upon him and bequeathed such things, in other words, to, you know, have such a light dealing or respect for his father, by pretending to shed tears for him in the daytime like an actor on the stage, but every night making mirth for having got the government, he would appear to be the same Archelaus with regard to Caesar, if he granted him the kingdom which he hath been to his father. Since he then dancing and singing, as though an enemy of his were fallen, not his own father, I mourn for my own
it's
father.
It's like the ones on the roof watching the Twin Towers fall down.
That, right? Making
the
merry.
Dancing Israelis.
Yeah, making merry. Absolutely. But they were spotted, and of course nothing was done about it. Okay, so to Caesar, which he hath been to his father, since he had then dancing and singing, as though an enemy of his were fallen, and not as though a man were carried to his funeral that was so nearly related, and had been so great a benefactor to him. But he said that the greatest crime of all was this, that he came now before Caesar to obtain the government by his grant, while he had before acted in all things as he could have acted, if Caesar himself, who ruled all, had fixed him firmly in the government. So, in other words, his basic argument is that Archelaus was presumptuous. And what he had most aggravated in his pleading was the slaughter of those about the temple and the impiety of it as done at the festival. And they were slain like sacrifices themselves, some of whom were foreigners and others of their own country, till the temple was full of dead bodies. And all this was done not by an alien, well, actually it was by an alien, an Edomite, but by one who pretended to the lawful title of a king, that he might complete the wicked tyranny which was his nature prompted to him, yeah, he got it from his daddy, and which is hated by all men, not by all Jews. Jews love that kind of stuff. On which account his father never so much as dreamed of making him a successor in the kingdom when he was of a sound mind, because he knew his disposition. And in his former and more authentic testament, he appointed his antagonist Antipas to succeed. But that Archelaus was called by his father to that dignity when he was in a dying condition, both of body and mind. Now, we have to interject here. Herod knew that Antipas was trying to take the kingdom from him, and had him slain just a few days before before Herod died. So Archelaus was the only choice left. So anyway, while Antipas was called when ripest in his judgment, and of such strength of his body as made him capable of managing his own affairs, and if his father had the like notion of him formerly that he had now shown, yet he hath given a sufficient specimen of what a king is likely to be. Well, maybe I'm confusing Antipas with Antipater.
Yeah,
right. Okay, so Antipater, Herod's son. Okay.
Right.
full-blown enema. I'm not sure if Antipas is a half-breed or not. Okay. There are too many.
He's still an Edomite.
He's still an Edomite. That's right. That's right. Okay. So, and if his father had the like notion of him formerly that he hath now shown, yet he hath given a sufficient specimen what a king is likely to be when he hath in effect deprived Caesar of that power of disposing of the kingdom, which he justly hath, and hath not abstained from making a terrible slaughter of his fellow citizens in the temple while he was but a private person. So it basically, his slaughtering the people during the Feast of Unleavened Bread was a huge mistake being now used against Archelaus. Over to you.
He really turned the true Judahites against him.
That's right.
By doing that. He shot himself in the foot. Section 6. So when Antipater had made this speech and had confirmed what he had said by producing many witnesses from among Archelaus' own relations, he made an end of his pleading, upon which Nicolaus rose up to plead for Archelaus and said that what had been done at the temple was rather to be attributed to the mind of those that had been killed than to the authority of Archelaus. For that those who were with the authors of such things are not only wicked in the injuries they do of themselves, but in forcing sober persons to avenge themselves upon them. Now it is evident that what these did in way of opposition was done under pretense. Indeed, against Archelaus, but in reality against Caesar himself, for they, after an injurious manner, attacked and killed those who were sent by Archelaus and who came only to put a stop to their doings.
Okay, now this is a pretty obvious lie. The Judahites simply wanted to practice the Feast of Unleavened Bread, so to accuse them of being opposed to Caesar is an obvious falsehood. So we'll see how Caesar reacts to this. Back to you.
This is all the plotting by the Edomites.
Plotting against each other now.
Typical Edomite methodology. Twist the truth.
Right.
And if you've done something, accuse others of doing it.
That's right. So
they had no regard either to God or to the festival, whom Antipater yet is not ashamed to patronize, whether it be out of his indulgence of an hostility to Archelaus or out of his hatred of virtue and justice. For as to those who begin such disturbances and first set about such unrighteous actions, they are the men who force those that punish them to betake themselves to arms, even if it is against their will. So that Antipater, in effect, ascribes the rest of what was done to all those who were of counsel to the accusers. For nothing which is here accused of injustice has been done, but what was derived from them as its authors. Nor are those things evil in themselves, but so represented only in order to do harm to Archelaus. Such is these men's inclination to do an injury to a man that is of their family, their father's benefactor, and familiarly acquainted with them, and that has ever lived in friendship with them. For that, as to this testament, it was made by the king when he was of a sound mind, and so ought to be of more authority than his former testament. And that for this reason, because Caesar is therein left to be the judge and disposer of all therein contained. And for Caesar, he will not, to be sure, at all imitate the unjust proceedings of those men who, during Herod's whole life, had on all occasions been joint partakers of power with him, and yet do zealously try to injure his determination, while they have not themselves had the same regard to their kinsmen, which Archelaus had. Caesar will not therefore annul the testament of a man whom he had entirely supported, of his friend and ally, and that which is committed to him in trust to ratify, nor will Caesar's virtuous and upright disposition, which is known and uncontested through all the habitable world.
Suck up, suck up, suck up. Right?
Oh, kissy, kissy, kissy.
You are so great, God on earth.
Yes. Imitate the wickedness of these men in condemning a king as a madman and having lost his reason while he has bequeathed the succession to a good son of his and to one who flies to Caesar's upright determination for refuge.
Right.
Oh, I'm such a victim.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and they put a noose around my neck and poured bleach on me. Yeah, nor can Aaron. Nor can Aaron. And
to blame somebody else, right?
Oh, this is too good. Nor can Aaron at any time have been mistaken in his judgment about a successor, while he showed so much wisdom as to submit all to Caesar's determination.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, you can understand that Caesar, I think we're talking about Augustus still here, if I'm not mistaken, that he had by this time been fed up with the machinations of the Edomite rulers. Okay.
Oh man, they played him like a saxophone. Dude.
Yeah, right.
Up and down the scale.
Yeah, and so I think all he could do is throw up his hands and to toss a coin in the air and see what happens. Because man, there's no way he's going to get a good ruler. He's just hoping to get one who's somewhat obedient. All right. Section 7. Now when Nicolaus had laid these things before Caesar, he ended his plea. Whereupon Caesar was so obliging to Archelaus that he raised him up when he had cast himself down at his feet and said that he will well deserve the kingdom. And soon he let them know that he was so far moved in his favor that he would not act otherwise than his father's testament directed. Now, of course, Herod was not of sound mind during his entire reign, but in the last couple of weeks, he was wavering himself as to which of his sons should rule. He had no idea himself. So what kind of a testament could he follow? Anyway, this was the last event, and so Caesar determined upon, confirming the last event. And that was for the advantage of Archelaus. However, while he gave this encouragement to Archelaus to depend on him securely, he made no full determination about him. And when the assembly was broken up, he considered by himself whether he should confirm the kingdom to Archelaus or whether he should part it among all Herod's posterity. And this because they all stood in need of much assistance to support them. Okay, so he has a different idea from all of them. And that is to give each one of Herod's heirs a little bit of the kingdom and see how that works. All right. Okay, chapter 10.
Chapter 10. Let me highlight this one. These are just so exciting. I mean, you see why I wanted to continue these. This is just too good. I mean, it just compares with today.
Mm-hmm. The Edomites in charge. And we do have Edomites in charge.
Compare what's going on then with what's going on in all the different governments, not just here.
Oh, yeah.
Total corruption. The they're playing all this stuff in Europe, and they're doing all this backstabbing and lying and, what do you people want? Well, we're going to vote. We vote to leave Brexit. Well...
you won't.
we might do that sometime in the future, but right now, Oh, they just They need to have a hemp fest over there.
Right. Calm things down, right?
Yes, with with hemp rope.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Well, we need to play that Carl Klang song, Hang 'em High.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, the people are getting all happy about Theresa May resigning on June 7th, but who's going to take her place? Might even be worse than Theresa May.
What is going to take her place?
Yeah, yes. What? That's right.
What? Mm-hmm. Not who, but what? A rebellion against Sabinus. Another rebellion.
Another one.
And how Varys brought the authors of it to punishment. But before these things could be brought to a settlement, Malthus, Archelaus' mother, fell into a sickness and died of it.
Mm.
And letters came from Varus, the president of Syria, which informed Caesar of the revolt of the Judeans. For after Archelaus was sailed, the whole nation was in a disturbance.
Mm.
So, Varus, since he was there himself, brought the authors of the disturbance to punishment, and when he had restrained them for the most part from this rebellion, which was a great one, he took his journey to Antioch, leaving one legion of his army at Jerusalem, to keep the Judeans quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Who were now very fond of innovation. Innovation, yeah.
Yeah.
Yet did not this at all avail to put an end to that their rebellion. For after Varus was gone away, Sabinus, Caesar's procurator, stayed behind and greatly distressed the Judeans, relying on the forces that were left there, that they would, by their multitude, protect him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For he had made use of them and armed them as his guards, thereby so oppressing the Judeans and giving them so great disturbance that at length they rebelled. For he used force in seizing these citadels and zealously pressed on the search after the king's money in order to seize upon it by force on account of his love of gain and his extraordinary covetousness.
Well, he was the tax collector, right? You think he was skimming some of those taxes?
Surely not.
Right? Indeed, this level of corruption is just like what we have today. It's global. All of these officials of the European Union, they're all on the take. They're unelected bureaucrats. They could care less how the people live, but money is being made by bringing in all of these foreigners from Africa and the Middle East to disrupt life in Europe. Yet the vast
majority—everybody so tore up over all the violence and the stuff that's going on over there that they can't organize to get these people out.
That's right. That's right. And the vast majority of these bureaucrats are white liberals. They're the ones that are destroying everything, you know, with the instructions coming from the Rothschilds. So there's no way this system is going to change of itself. There is going to be a violent revolution. There is. Okay. All right. Section two. But on the approach of Pentecost, which is a festival of ours, so called from the days of our forefathers, a great many 10,000s of men got together. Nor did they come only to celebrate the festival, but out of their indignation at the madness of Sabinus and at the injuries he offered them. A great number.
Pentecost was this past week here.
Right, yeah. Yep. And thank you for. Nobody reminded me. A great number there was of Galileans and Idumeans, and many of them from Jericho. Okay, so here. Idumeans. All right. So we're seeing here the mixture now of Galileans who were primarily of Benjamin, and the Judahites of Judea, and Idumeans now mixing in with them. And this is the situation that obtained when Christ walked the earth. You had a mixture of Idumeans and Judahites, and the Idumeans would have been pretending to obey Yahweh's laws at this point, fooling the Judahites. So let me start the sentence over. A great number there was of Galileans and Idumeans, and many men from Jericho, and others who had passed over the river Jordan and inhabited those parts. Now, many of these would have been true Judahites, but I would think the Edomites would have stayed in their home territory and not left Judea, because Judah and Idumea had become one country. But only the richest Idumeans traveled to Rome in order to influence the politics there, okay? And this is how the Roman Caesars were dealt with. So the Roman Caesars came to hate all Judeans because of the way they were dealt with by the Idumean moneylenders, okay?
Right.
This whole multitude joined themselves to all the rest and were more zealous than the others in making an assault on Sabinus in order to be avenged on him. So they parted themselves into three bands and encamped themselves in the places following. Some of them seized on the hippodrome, and of the other two bands, one pitched themselves from the northern part of the temple to the southern and on the east quarter. But the third band held the western part of the city where the king's palace was. Their work tended entirely to besiege the Romans and to enclose them on all sides. Now Sabinus was afraid of these men's number and of their resolution, who had little regard to their lives, but were very dangerous not to be overcome when they thought it a point of puissance to overcome their enemies. Puissance, I believe, is
might.
Yeah, okay, or extreme resolve. So he sent them immediately a letter to Verus, and as he used to do, was very pressing with him, and entreated him to come quickly to his assistance. Yeah, I can't collect taxes under these circumstances, Verus. Come quickly. Because the forces he had left were in imminent danger, and would probably in no long time be seized upon and cut to pieces. While he did himself get up to the highest tower of the fortress, Phasaelus, which had been built in honor of Phasaelus, King Herod's brother, and called so when the Parthians had brought him to his death. So Sabinus gave thence a signal to the Romans to fall upon the Judeans, although he did not himself venture so much as to come down to his friends, and thought he might expect that the others should expose themselves first to die on account of his avarice. Well, he was a tax collector, not a soldier. However, the Romans ventured to make a sally out of their place, and a terrible battle ensued, wherein, though it is true the battle, the Romans beat their adversaries, yet were not the Judeans daunted in their resolutions, even when they had the sight of that terrible slaughter that was made of them. But they went round about and got upon those cloisters which encompassed the outer court of the temple, where a great fight was still continued, and they cast stones at the Romans, partly with their hands and partly with slings, as being much used to those exercises. Yeah, they were well trained in those things. All the archers also in array did the Romans a great deal of mischief, because they used their hands dexterously from a place superior to the others, and because the others were at an utter loss what to do. Well, they are the descendants of David, many of them, right?
For well, when a sling, when properly used with a stone of a certain weight, is just like a modern firearm.
It's deadly.
Remember when he cast with the sling against Goliath,
right?
The giant, it hit him in the forehead and went all the way into his brain.
Right.
Just like shooting this big giant with this massive skull with a firearm.
Yeah.
They're deadly, and they were very, very, and they could hit you right in the eye if they wanted.
Right.
They were good with those things.
Yeah, so I had a bunch of people good with these stones and slings. For when they tried to shoot their arrows against the Judeans upwards, these arrows could not reach them, insomuch that the Judeans were easily too hard for their enemies. And this sort of fight lasted a great while, till at last the Romans, who were greatly distressed by what was done, set fire to the cloisters so privately that those who were gotten up upon them did not perceive it. This fire, being fed by a great deal of combustible matter, caught hold immediately on the roof of the cloisters. Wow! So the wood, which was full of pitch and wax, and whose gold was laid on it with wax, yielded to the flame presently. And then we find that in 33 years later, the whole temple was burned in such a manner. And those vast works, which were of the highest value and esteem, were destroyed utterly, while those that were on the roof unexpectedly perished at the same time. For as the roof tumbled down, some of these men tumbled down with it, and others of them were killed by their enemies who encompassed them. There was a great number more, sounds like the Alamo, there was a great number more who, out of despair of saving their lives and out of astonishment at the misery that surrounded them, did either cast themselves into the fire or threw themselves upon their own swords, and so got out of their misery. But this is just like, it's going to be like this again, folks. These are the end times. But as to those that retired behind the same way by which they ascended and thereby escaped, they were all killed by the Romans, as being unarmed men and their courage failing them.
Please don't hurt me. I don't have any weapons. Bang!
Yeah, as if the Roman soldiers cared anything about armed or unarmed. Right?
Like the ATF.
Yeah.
You know, shooting people in the head. The people that were unarmed at Waco, the little kids.
Amen.
Remember?
They killed the kids. That's right. They shot the kids. Their wild fury being now not able to help them because they were destitute of armor, insomuch that of those that went up to the top of the roof, not one escaped. The Romans also rushed through the fire where it gave them room so to do and seized on that treasure where the sacred money was reposited. Well, this was what Sabinus had intended all along, right? To get that treasure. A great part of which was stolen by the soldiers. And Sabinus got openly 400 talents, and who knows how much was stolen.
They kept some for themselves and gave old Sabinus 400 talents.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, who knows? Sabinus is such a corrupt individual that his soldiers wouldn't give a damn about him, right? And so they kept a lot of it for themselves.
He didn't give a damn. As long as he got something, it was okay.
Yeah. Amazing.
Care.
Amazing stuff. The honesty of this account by Josephus is just fabulous. He shows the utter corruption of this entire Roman-led regime.
Is there any difference between then and now?
No. None.
Okay.
None.
That's why we're reading this stuff, folks.
Yeah.
And
so you can imagine.
Under the sun, and the Idumeans, the Edomites, have never changed.
Nope, they have never changed.
This is pre-Christ.
And our people are still as gullible as ever, not learning from history. That's why we're reading.
Who reads this stuff except us?
Right. Yeah.
Who publicizes it and puts it out on the air except EFR? Who does it? Nobody.
Yeah. All right, back to you.
That's why y'all should help support EFR. You're not going to get this from
anybody else. Right.
Okay. Section 3, but this calamity of the Judeans' friends who fell in this battle grieved them, as did also this plundering of the money dedicated to God in the temple. Accordingly, that body of them which continued best together and was the most warlike encompassed the palace. And check this out, and threatened to set fire to it to kill all that were in it, just like they set fire to the temple.
Waco, yep.
Okay. Yet still they commanded them to go out presently and promised that if they would do so, they would not hurt them, nor Sabinus neither. At which time, the greatest part of the king's troops deserted to them. The greatest part of the king's troops deserted to them, while Rufus and Gratus, who had 3,000 of the most warlike of Herod's army with them, who were men of active bodies, now they were bad motor scooters, went over to the Romans. There was also a band of horsemen under the command of Rufus, which itself went over to the Romans also.
Man, to choose your sides. Yep. We're going to rumble.
However, the Judeans went on with the siege, or Judahites,
okay, right,
and
case.
Dug mines under the palace walls and begged those that were gone over to the other sides not to be their hindrance. Now they had such a proper opportunity for the recovery of their country's ancient liberty. And for Sabinus, truly he was desirous of going away with his soldiers, but was not able to trust himself with the enemy on account of what mischief he had already done them. And he took this great pretended lenity of theirs for an argument why he should not comply with them. And so, because he expected that Varus was coming, he still bore the siege. Over to you.
So there's no making peace here. I mean, the hostility between not just the Judahites and the Romans, but the Edomites and the Judahites and the Romans, right? There's no way to sort this out.
It had become anarchy.
Yes.
Everybody was choosing sides, and I foresee that here.
It's coming here, folks.
When it hits the fan, there's going to be people in all these camps that are going to choose sides.
Yep.
And
liberals, conservatives, Jews.
You're going to see a civil war that's going to make the last one look like a cakewalk.
That's right.
It says in the scripture that 2/3 of mankind will be slain. Deal with that.
Amen. All right, section 4. Now, at this time, there were 10,000 other disorders in Judea. Only 10,000? Which were like tumults, because a great number put themselves into a warlike posture, either out of hopes of gain to themselves or out of enmity to the Judeans. In particular, 2,000 of Herod's soldiers who had been already disbanded got together in Judea itself and fought against the king's troops, although Achiabus, Herod's first cousin, opposed them. But as he was driven out of the plains into the mountainous parts by the military skill of those men, he kept himself in the fastnesses that were there and saved what he could. So, yeah, it was total anarchy. Pick your side, defend what you think is worth defending, and your life. And
you couldn't go anywhere unarmed. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it's going to be that way here, and it's getting to be that way. That's why everybody's got concealed carry permits, because they're tired of being victimized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now we see here even those pure-blooded Judahites that were still trying to regain the kingdom for themselves, they were undisciplined. They were undisciplined. And
They were just civilians. They weren't soldiers.
Right. And so, but they knew that they were being oppressed, and they fought against their oppressors. What else could they do? All right, back to you.
Right, section 5. There was also Judas. Now, this is got a footnote. Let me turn to the back and get it here. That's Judas, footnote 3. Unless this Judas, the sons of Ezekias, be the same with that Theudas mentioned, Acts 5:36, Josephus must have omitted him for that other Theophoudas, whom he afterward mentions under Faustus the Roman governor, is much too late to correspond to him that is mentioned in the Acts. The names Theudas, Thaddeus, and Judas differ but literal, little.
Right.
See Archbishop Usher's Annals at AM 4001. However, since Josephus does not pretend to reckon up the heads of all those 10,000 disorders in Judea, which he tells us were then abroad, see section 4 and 8, the Theudas of the Acts might be at the head of one of those rebellions, though not particularly one named by him. Thus he informs us here in the Jewish War that certain of the rebellious came and burned the royal palace at Amathus or Beth Ramta, upon the River Jordan. Perhaps that the leader who is not named by Josephus might be this Theudas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this particular Judas, and there's so many with this name that he's saying it's impossible to tell who he is.
How many were named Jehoshaphat?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Close to 40.
Right.
A lot of people named Jehoshaphat.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah. There was also Judas, the son of that Ezekias, who had been the head of the robbers. Which Ezekias was a very strong man and had with great difficulty been caught by Herod. This Judas, or Judas, having gotten together a multitude of men of an immoral character about Sepphoris in Galilee, made an assault upon the palace there and seized upon all the weapons that were laid up in it. Oh, yeah, raided the army, and with them armed every one of those that were with him and carried away what money was left there. Everybody was strapped, and he became terrible to all men by tearing and rending those that came near him, and all this in order to raise himself, and out of an ambitious desire of the royal dignity. And he hoped to obtain that as the reward, not of his virtuous skill in war, but of his extravagance in doing injuries. In other words, they wanted to raise himself up by hurting a lot of people.
Right. So apparently he was a Judahite, but a very criminally minded one. Okay.
How many bad white guys do we see?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Look at our Congress. They're not old.
Joe Biden.
They're a bunch of renegade bad white people.
That's right. Yeah, opportunists.
They are the tares of the tribe. They're going to burn.
That's right. That's right. Section 6. There was also Simon, who had been a slave of Herod the king, but in other respects a comely person, of a tall and robust body. He was one that was much superior to others of his order, and had had great things committed to his care. This man was elevated at the disorderly state of things.
Elated,
right.
Yes.
At the disorderly state of things, and was so bold as to put a diadem on his head. Whoa, I guess he was just carrying that around with him. While a certain number of the people stood by him, and by them he was declared to be a king, and thought himself more worthy of that dignity than anyone else. Joined the club. He burnt down the royal palace at Jericho and plundered what was left in it. Is there any city in the kingdom that hasn't been plundered yet? He also set fire to many others of the king's houses in several places of the country and utterly destroyed them, and permitted those that were with him to take what was left in them for a prey. And he would have done greater things unless care had been taken to repress him immediately. For Gratus, when he had joined himself to some Roman soldiers, took the forces he had with him and met Simon, and after a great and long fight, no small part of those that came from Perea, who were a disordered body of men and fought rather in a bold than in a skillful manner, were destroyed. And although Simon had saved himself by flying away through a certain valley, yet Gratus overtook him and cut off his head. And the diet of two.
Yeah, that prevents any further bad behavior.
That's right.
There's no chance of him being released by a dishonest judge.
Yeah.
Just whack the head off and it solves the problem.
Yeah, the penitentiary be damned. The royal palace, also at Amathus by the River Jordan, was burnt down by a party of men that were got together, as were those belonging to Simon. And thus did a great and wild fury spread itself over the nation, because they had no king to keep the multitude in good order, and because those foreigners who came to reduce the seditious to sobriety did, on the contrary, set them more in a flame because of the injuries they offered them and the avaricious management of their affairs. Well, guess
greedy.
What? Yeah. Palestine is being officiated by just such people today, folks. Kyrgyzstan, back to you.
Yeah. Oi, such a deal we got for you. For you we got all wholesale. Oi, such a deal. All right, section 7. But because Athrongus, a person neither eminent by the dignity of his progenitors, nor for any great wealth he was possessed of, but one that had in all respects been a shepherd only, and was not known by anybody, yet because he was a tall man and excelled others in the strength of his hands, he was so bold as to set himself up for king.
Wow, another one.
Another big bully, okay?
Yeah, right.
This man thought it so sweet a thing to do more than ordinary injuries to others, and that although he would be killed, he did not much care if he lost his life in so great a design.
It's king or death.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be king for a little while, then you can kill me.
Yeah, right.
He had also four brothers who were tall men themselves and were believed to be superior to others in the strength of their hands, and thereby were encouraged to aim at great things, and thought that the strength of theirs would support them in retaining the kingdom. A sword in the guts sort of includes that. Each of these ruled over a band of men of their own, for those that had got together to them were very numerous. They had a big bunch of rabble.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were every one of them also commanders, but when they came to fight, they were subordinate to him and fought for him, while he put a diadem about his head and assembled a council to debate about what things should be done, and all things were done according to his pleasure. And this man retained his power a great while. He was also called king, and had nothing to hinder him from doing what he pleased. He also, as well as his brothers, killed a great many, both of the Romans and of the king's forces, with the same level of hatred for either.
Wow.
The king's forces they fell upon because of the licentious conduct they had been allowed.
Mm.
In other words, just had no restraint at all.
Right.
Under Herod's government. And they fell upon the Romans because of the injuries they had so lately received from them. It was payback time.
That's right. Yep.
But in process of time, they grew more cruel to all sorts of men, nor could any escape from one or other of these rebellions, since they killed some out of the hopes of gain, and others from a mere custom of slaying men.
So Robin Hood started robbing the people too.
Right? They once attacked a company of Romans at Emmaus, who were bringing grain and weapons to the army, and fell upon Arius, the centurion who commanded the company, and shot 40 of the best of his foot soldiers. But the rest of them, were frightened at their slaughter and left their dead behind, but saved themselves by the means of Gratus, who came with the king's troops that were about him to their assistance. Now these four brothers continued the war a long while by such sort of expeditions, and much grieved the Romans, but did their own nation also a great deal of mischief. They were just whacking everybody. Mm-hmm. They didn't care. Yep. Friend or foe. Yet they were afterwards subdued, one of them in a fight with Gratus, another with Ptolemy. Archelaus also took the eldest of them prisoner, while the last of them was so dejected at the other's misfortune and saw so plainly that he had no way now left to save himself, his army being worn away with sickness and continual labors, that he also delivered himself up to Archelaus upon his promise and oath to God to preserve his life.
Oh, wow.
But these things came to pass a good while afterwards.
In other words, he
surrendered. Please don't kill me.
Yeah, because our contemporaneous account still has Archelaus in Rome. So he's telling the story of these four brothers, and Archelaus had come back by this time. Section 8. And now Judea was full of robbery. So is America, folks. America mm-hmm. is being robbed every second Absolutely. Of the day. And as the several companies of seditious lighted upon anyone to head them, he was created a king immediately in order to do mischief to the public. They were in some small measure, indeed, and in small matters, hurtful to the Romans. But the murders they committed upon their own people lasted a long while. So the anarchy was so bad that they were really doing very little damage to Rome, but more to each other and to the people. Back to you.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as Varus was once informed of the state of Judea by Sabinus's writing to him, he was afraid for the legions he had left there. In other words, they were getting outnumbered, and they mm-hmm. weren't sufficient in number to handle the problem.
Right.
Well, they've got all these thugs in the government here, but if the people in this company rise up, or if there's just anarchy here, they're going to be too few to handle the problem.
Right.
Martial law or no martial law. They are going to be a fine source of weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For the people. The people are going to just take their guns.
That's right.
So much for gun laws.
Swords
so he
in this
took
case.
The two other legions, for there were three legions in all belonging to Syria, and four troops of horsemen with the several auxiliary forces which either the kings or certain of the tetrarchs afforded him, and made what haste he could to assist those that were then besieged in Judea. He also gave order that all were sent out for this expedition should hurry, to Ptolemais. The citizens of Berytus also gave him 1,500 reinforcements.
Wow.
As he passed through their city. They joined forces.
Mm-hmm.
Aretas also, the king of Arabia Petraea, out of his hatred to Herod, and in order to purchase the favor of the Romans, sent him no small assistance, besides their footmen and horsemen. And when he had now collected all his forces together, he committed part of them to his son and to a friend of his, and sent them upon an expedition into Galilee, which lies in the neighborhood of Ptolemais, who made an attack upon the enemy and put them to flight and took Sepphoris and made its inhabitants slaves and burned the city.
Man.
But Varus himself pursued his march for Samaria with his whole army, yet he did not meddle with the city of that name because it had not at all joined with the rebellious, but pitched his camp at a certain village that belonged to Ptolemy, whose name was Arras. That was the name of the village,
mm-hmm.
which the Arabians burned out of their hatred to him and out of the hostility they bore to his friends. Thus they marched to another village whose name was Sampho, which the Arabians plundered and burned, although it was a fortified and a strong place. And all along this march, nothing escaped them, but all places were full of fire and slaughter.
Wow.
So the cities all over the world are going to be burned.
Right.
It says so in the scripture. It's gonna, and only the remnant that's out in the country is gonna survive.
Yep.
Like the great prophet Hank Jr. said, I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive.
Right.
Emmaus also was burned by Pharaoh's order after its inhabitants had deserted it, that he might avenge those that had there been destroyed. From there, he now marched to Jerusalem, whereupon those Judeans whose camp lay there and who had besieged the Roman legion, not bearing the coming of this army, left the siege unfinished. But as to the Jerusalem Judeans, when Varus reproached them bitterly for what had been done, they cleared themselves of the accusation and alleged that the conflux of the people was occasioned by the feast, that the war was not made with their approval, but by the rashness of the strangers, while they were on the side of the Romans and besieged together with them, rather than having any inclination to besiege them. There also came beforehand to meet Varus, Joseph, the first cousin of King Herod, as also Gratus and Rufus, who brought their soldiers along with them, together with those Romans who had been besieged. But Sabinus did not come into Varus's presence, but stole out of the city privately and went to the seaside.
Time for a vacation. Yeah. All right, section 10. Upon this, Varus sent a party of his army into the country to seek out those that had been the authors of the revolt. And when they were discovered, he punished some of them that were most guilty, and some he dismissed. Now the number of those that were crucified on this account were 2,000. After which he disbanded his army, which he found no wise useful to him in the affairs he came about, for they behaved themselves very disorderly and disobeyed his orders and what Varus desired them to do. And this out of regard to that gain which they made by the mischief they did. As for himself, when he was informed that 10,000 Judeans had gotten together, he made haste to catch them. But they did not proceed so far as to fight him, but by the advice of Achaiabus, they came together and delivered themselves up to him. Hereupon Varus forgave the crime of revolting to the multitude, but sent their several commanders to Caesar, many of whom Caesar dismissed. But for the several relations of Herod who had been among these men in this war, they were the only persons whom he punished, who, without the least regard to justice, fought against their own kindred. Okay, so Varus that set things right, at least as right as he could set them, given all the turmoil here. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we have about 10 minutes left. We can go into chapter 11.
Yeah.
Okay.
And let me highlight this so I don't lose my place when we get into the next week's show.
Right.
This is just some hot stuff. I mean, I'm enjoying the heck out of this.
Yeah, it's great history.
Wow. All right, a delegation to Caesar and how Caesar confirmed Herod's testament. Section 1. So, when Varus had settled these affairs and placed the former legion at Jerusalem, he returned back to Antioch. But as for Archelaus, he had new sources of trouble come upon him at Rome and on the occasion following. For a delegation of the Judeans who has come to Rome, Varus having permitted the nation to send it, that they might petition for the living by their own laws. Now, that Judeans, they were Judahites.
Right. They wanted to live by Yahweh's laws.
Only they wanted to go by the laws.
That's right.
The Judeans, as a national designator, does not necessarily mean that they were of the tribe of Judah. They just lived in the country.
The mixed multitude, yeah.
Right, right. For now, the number of the ambassadors that were sent by the authority of the nation was 50, who joined above 8,000 of the Judahites that were in Rome already.
Okay.
But Caesar assembled his friends and the chief men among the Romans in the temple of Apollo, which he had built at a vast charge, where the ambassadors came in a multitude of the Judahites that were already came with him, with them, as did also Archelaus and his friends. But as for the several kinsmen which Archelaus had, they would not join themselves with him out of their hatred to him. There's more Edomites fighting among themselves.
Right.
And yet they thought it too gross a thing for them to assist the ambassadors against him, as supposing it would be a disgrace to them, in Caesar's opinion, to think of thus acting in opposition to a man of their own family. They just wanted to do it privately.
Right. Edomite love.
Yes. Edomite Philip love. Also was come here out of Syria by the persuasion of Varus, and with and this principal intention to assist his brother Archelaus, for Varus was his great friend, but still so that if there should any change happen in the form of government, which Varus suspected there would, and if any distribution should be made on account of the number that desired the liberty of living by their own laws, that he might not be disappointed, but might have his share in it.
Mm-hmm.
Distribution of money.
Right. Okay. Right. So, well, one of the things that was of great benefit to Rome in allowing the Judahites to practice their own religion was the peaceable way in which tribute was collected. You know, that was the quid pro quo. Okay?
Right.
You give us your tax money, and we'll let you practice your religion. All right? But with all this chaos going on, and one Roman legion commander after another not knowing who to fight against, it was total chaos. Okay, let's see. Okay, I think we can do this. The next section is long. I think we can get it in. Section 2. Now, upon the liberty that was given to the Judahite ambassadors to speak, they who hoped to obtain a dissolution of the kingly government betook themselves to accuse Herod of his iniquities. And they declared that he was indeed in name a king, but that he had taken to himself an uncontrollable authority, which tyrants exercise over their subjects, and had made use of that authority for the destruction of the Judahites, and did not abstain from making any innovations among them besides, according to his own inclinations. And that whereas there were a great many who perished by that destruction he brought upon them, so many indeed as no other history relates, they that survived were far more miserable than those that suffered under him, not only by the anxiety they were under from his looks and disposition towards them, but from the danger their estates were in of being taken away by him, that he did never leave off adorning these cities that lay in their neighborhood, but were inhabited by foreigners. Ah, just like today. The Jews are bringing foreigners to take over our countries. But so that the cities belonging to his own government were ruined and utterly destroyed. That whereas, when he took to the kingdom, it was an extraordinarily flourishing condition, he had filled the nation with the utmost degree of poverty. And when upon unjust pretenses he had slain any of the nobility, he took away their estates. And when he permitted any of them to live, he condemned them to the forfeiture of what they possessed. So this is what they're complaining. This is what Herod done to the true Judahites of the kingdom. And besides the annual impositions which he had laid upon every one of them, they were to make liberal presents to himself, to his domestics and friends, and to such of his slaves as were vouchsafed the favor of being his tax gatherers. Because there was no way of obtaining a freedom from unjust violence without giving either gold or silver for it. Extraordinary taxation. Taxation without representation. That they would say nothing of the corruption of the chastity of their virgins and the reproach laid on their wives for incontinency, and those things acted after an insolent and inhuman manner. Because it was not a smaller pleasure to the sufferers to have such things concealed than it would have been not to have suffered them. So, in other words, they're betwixt and between. You know, what are they going to do when they have a tyrant as a leader? That Herod had put such abuses upon them as a wild beast would not have put on them if he had power given to rule over us. And that although their nation had passed through many subversions and alterations of government, their history gave no account of any calamity they had ever been under that could be compared with this which Herod had brought upon their nation. That it was for this reason that they thought they might justly and gladly salute Archelaus as king, upon this supposition that whosoever should be set over their kingdom, he would appear more mild to them than Herod had been. Okay, but Archelaus destroyed that belief by attacking the people who came to the Feast of Unleavened Bread.
They thought they were going to get the lesser of two evils.
Yes, right, right.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, and that they had joined with him in the mourning for his father in order to gratify him, and were ready to oblige him in other points also, if they could meet with any degree of moderation from him. Fat chance. Moderation, right, from a Jew? But that he seemed to be afraid lest he should not be deemed Herod's own son. And so, without any delay, he immediately let the nation understand his meaning, and this before his dominion was well established, since the power of disposing of it belonged to Caesar, who could either give it to him or not, as he pleased. So they're making the same accusation that Archelaus's competitor, right, was making. Okay. All right, continuing, that he had given a specimen of his future virtue to his subjects, and with what kind of moderation and good administration he would govern them, by that his first action which concerned them, his own citizens, and God himself also, when he had made the slaughter of 3,000 of his own countrymen at the temple. How then could they avoid the just hatred of him, who to the rest of his barbarity hath added this as one of our crimes, that we have opposed and contradicted him in the exercise of his authority. Now the main thing they desired was this, that they might be delivered from kingly and the like forms of government, and might be added to Syria, woe, and be put under the authority of such presidents of theirs as should be sent to them. For that it would thereby be made evident whether they be really a seditious people, and generally fond of innovations, or whether they would live in an orderly manner, if they might have governors of any sort of moderation set over them. So rather than having a Herodian ruling over them, they would prefer Roman leadership under Verus, because Verus was the one who was in charge there at the time.
Yep.
So this
and that's
is this,
about all we can really get today, because we're down less than 2 minutes. But boy, this has been an exciting read. Now, I hope everybody is enjoying this, because this history here is repeating itself today. Very, very much similarity,
right,
between what was happening then and what is happening in the world today.
And so, we have the same corrupt Edomite leadership in the world today that Judea had then.
They have not changed their modus operandi at all. Mm-hmm. They're still doing to us today what they were doing to us back then.
Mm-hmm. And, folks, this is why we should not support Jews any way, shape, or form. and come out of them, my people, come out of her, my people. All right. And pray for the second coming. I don't see what other deliverance there could be for us. All right. Thanks for listening, folks. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time.
May Yahweh bless and keep you, brothers and sisters.